And you know what, Bita? She was a religious woman.
She had a strong connection to Allah.
Yes, mm-hmm. She submitted herself to Allah's will and wisdom.
And we do believe that when you have that link with Allah, He would help you
and
go
really,
through.
I really believe that her connection with Allah saved her life.
Yeah, that's very true.
I do agree. And I think this religious goals even that she has in her life to be a good one too.
And you're right about the life goals, but being religious was a great
help,
you know, accommodation for her.
Yes. So, Bita, is there anything that happened in your life that made you think that, okay, there's no cure for this?
Not that much big that I, for example, can tell.
Worth mentioning.
But the thing is, all of us had some the same story in different ways. And the thing is, I've lost many friends in my life. In my community.
Yeah, which is very sad.
Yeah. Not losing them for, I don't know, these kind of natural accident. I lost them because some, I don't know, feeling a position between us.
Oh, yeah.
And these emotional things happened between us.
Yeah.
I lost them. It was like, okay, who was the person who did something wrong? I was just always looking for the answer of this question.
Who was the wrongdoer?
Yeah, exactly. Who was the wrongdoer? If it was me, so I have to, you know, pay for that. But I couldn't find something special in our relations. After a while, I understood that sometimes for overcoming these kind of anger, sorrow for something that you lose, you have to have physical distance. Physical distance is a way that you can choose to overcome the sadness of losing someone.
You mean ignore the source of misery that you're suffering from?
I mean, for example, if you just, that person that you have some problem with is the one who is your near colleague or something, you have to have some physical distance. Go to somewhere else. Go work to another place or something. And this will help you to maintain your mind peace.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was the method I've used, and it was successful, I think. And I overcome the fear of, you know, lacking something. You know, because when you lose something, when you are in a bad situation, your defects, your weaknesses are somehow
what
bolder.
What did you tell yourself when you were talking to yourself, okay, do not be scared of losing other people?
It was like, it is life.
Yeah,
you know, the only
that's justifying.
There was nothing she could do in that situation. Mm-hmm. You know, Bita referred it quite correctly, that she referred to herself and searched for the source of problem within herself. And when she couldn't find nothing, she concluded that, okay, the problem was not mine. Or maybe, Bita, I don't know, maybe you found something within yourself and tried to fix it. But the major problem was within the situation, within your friend. I don't know, within lots of other criteria. And that was the correct thing to do, I think.
To think.
Mm-hmm.
And then find out the source of problem and then to solve it.
Mm-hmm. And Asma, there is another thing to overcome these wounds. And that is optimism in future.
Which is very difficult.
Which is difficult.
Definitely
but it
difficult.
Is quite helpful.
Which is sometimes harmful, I think. Optimism.
Yeah, harmful. I do believe in that.
Because,
you know, because then
you
would be disillusioned.
Exactly.
It would turn into an illusion. Okay, I would say that, yes, I'm going to have a brighter future. Tomorrow is going to be better than today. Then just like the example you mentioned, just like the girl you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So if she had told herself that tomorrow is going to be a better day, I would have a brighter future. And she cannot wait for that large scale of time. At the moment, she would have been disillusioned and depressed.
You know, I'm not talking about just being optimistic about future. And you must do things to make the situation better.
I guess moderation is the key point to everything.
Keep being realistic, I
think. Yeah,
yeah. It's the best way.
Yeah, I do believe in realism. That is going to help. But sometimes, actually, the reality is so much bitter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I know some people who have done something wrong in their life. For example, consider they've done some sins.
Mm-hmm.
all the time they keep eating themselves and
self-blaming.
Self-blaming. And when I look at them, I just say that sometimes exonerating yourself from different sins that you've done, from different miseries that you've caused to other people, is going to help you feel better. I know it's very much difficult. Sometimes the amount of sorrow that you've caused to other people, that you've injected other people with, is going to be too much that you cannot overcome it. But once you've came to the point that you understood the wrong thing you have done, mm-hmm. and then you ask Allah for forgiveness, I guess He would forgive you.
Exactly. But the thing is, you know, Asma, I think you're being too realistic. Too realistic.
too much. You know, too much of that is dangerous.
The thing is, sometimes you cannot do anything alone. And, you know, have a kind of good family, good person next to you you up for these situations is necessary. For example, you told me that after the death of spouse, she went through another marriage and she was successful.
Yeah.
And I think this is another reason.
So you mean that we can use the help of other people
exactly,
as well?
Exactly, in this road. And I think when you have another people next to you, you won't feel alone. Because when you are lonely, when you're in a lonely list, it's like a kind of dark room. You cannot see anything. You cannot decide correctly. And these feelings of anger, sorrowness, or anything will be stronger in you.
Yeah.
It flow around your body, around your soul, and sometimes you cannot control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So up until now, we came mm-hmm. into conclusion that miseries do happen in our life. We are human beings. We have a heart. We are a cauldron of different emotions, sometimes mixed emotions. And many times, there are some obstacles that will get into the way. Miseries would happen without you even predicting it. But still, we have been blessed with the bliss of forgetting. So they even say that insan, the word insan, comes from the root of forgetting. So we have been blessed with that blessing as well. But sometimes it turns out to be difficult, which you already said that, okay, we should come to conclusion that we have, at the very first point, we have to accept that something has happened to me. I need to help myself overcome it. And now I can use the help of other people. I can use the help of a therapist. I can help myself through the spiritual journeys that I'm going through. Having a link with Allah is going to help me. And plenty much more of these things. Do you still have things to share with the audience?
No, that's it. You know, I do agree with you. And the gist is just try to understand the way you are in it and decide to be the one you have to be. You can overcome everything because you are powerful. Believe in your power.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's the best sentence to wrap it up. You have the strength to overcome it. No matter how much breakage you have on your heart, actually, it makes your heart more beautiful because when it sings, it's going to be having some more beautiful of melodies. That's actually at least the thing that God would hear from your heart. The hearts that have been more miserable would sing more beautifully in the spiritual realm. So thank you, dear listeners. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the Ummah rise again let us see daylight again once again
Yusuf Jalali Tehran
Ruba Shavit Gaza
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The World Bank, in its latest report on Afghanistan, has said that global food and energy prices continue to put pressure on basic household prices in the crisis-stricken country. At the same time, rising inflation and slow recovery in nominal wages have decreased the people's ability to buy basic goods.
Today, we witness people have lesser purchasing power. Previously, a middle-class household used to pay nearly $200 to buy multiple goods, but today they only ask for very basic necessities like oil and flour. You know, the prices are increasing. In addition, the banking crisis and sanctions have affected the prices and business in the market.
The World Bank report has confirmed that since June 2022, Afghanistan's currency has depreciated slightly against the U.S. dollar, while the prices of basic food and fuel items continue the upward trend. Abdullah Rizayi, who has been working as a shoemaker for almost half of his life, says he had never experienced such economic conditions before.
In the past years, I used to make sufficient income from this job. Currently, I'm not only receiving fewer customers, but the money that I earn has lost its value. I used to make 300 Afghanis per day, but nowadays I hardly can make 50, which is the price of 5 loaves of bread. Sometimes I feel ashamed when I look at my children.
In the meantime, widespread joblessness is leaving many Afghan families without a solution to make ends meet.
We have had a job once or twice a week in the spring and summer. I wonder why we should do it in the winter when there's no job to do. People are struggling with hunger and difficulties. Some have their own houses, but they should pay for the house rent too. This year, I fell short of paying the bills, and now I'm in debt.
This comes as the World Food Program has warned that Afghanistan is facing its most serious risk of famine in 20 years. The UN body has asked for $1.1 billion life-saving assistance for 18 million people across Afghanistan. The ripple effects of the U.S. sanctions and freezing of billions of dollars in Afghans' assets are pushing up inflation in Afghanistan. People here are calling for the release of assets and more international funding to the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Polls show that a divided Congress appears all but assured 6 weeks before the federal legislative vote in the United States, which would also ensure continued political division and stagnation. The Democrat-led inquiry over protests which alleged election fraud in 2020 continue to plod on, but polls show they have had essentially no effect on changing voters' opinions. While longtime Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi looks certain to be forced out of power in November, the top level of Republican leadership looks likely to add more so-called Trumpists, reflecting the enduring influence of ex-President Donald Trump. The biggest unofficial political party in the United States is actually the self-declared independent voter. Polls indicate that a huge swing of 12% has taken place within this king-making group. In 2020, post-election polls found that they favored Democrats by 7%, but independents are now tilting towards Republicans by 5%.
Not happy with the way things are, obviously. We're all worried about inflation, and it's impacting our, you know, wallets. I wish there were more parties besides Republicans and Democrats, because it's just, you know, party interests, and people like you and me are just left behind. We have to live our lives, and politicians aren't really thinking about us.
Pollsters say the Democratic Party seems certain to lose control of the lower house of parliament, if not both houses. As the election nears, many expect the ongoing inflation and economic growth disasters caused by blowback from Western sanctions on Russia to play a larger and larger role in voters' decisions. A recent survey by Forbes found that 30% of Americans are drawing from their savings more than usual, which is the highest percentage in the survey's history. Another analysis found that the average American has lost over $4,000 in income since Joe Biden took office due to the increases in the inflation and interest rates. The midterms are on track to be the most expensive vote ever, reaching $10 billion by Election Day. Many say that's a reminder of the enormous role played in American democracy by money and advertising. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
A voting station in central Donetsk. While Ukraine and NATO have condemned these referendums in the strongest terms, Russia and the local authorities are pushing on regardless.
It's kind of celebration for all of us today. Emotions are high. We've been waiting for it for many years, for 8 years. People are coming with positive emotions, with tears in their eyes.
I believe that besides providing us the opportunity to realize our future, it gives us guarantees of peace. This referendum gives us the chance finally to become again part of Russia, the country we were torn off from 30 years ago.
Now, while there is a palpable happiness and excitement amongst people here who are voting, it's important to recognize that in any referendum, legitimate or not, there are some who'll be happy about the results and some very unhappy. And so it's important to recognize that there is a minority of pro-Ukrainians here in Donbass, in particular in the Zaporozhye regions and the Kherson region. There are large amounts of Ukrainians who either won't vote today at a protest or who will vote no. And they particularly will be very unhappy that this referendum is taking place at all.
The fact that the world community doesn't recognize this referendum doesn't have big significance for us, because we, being people of Donbass, want to express our will. Our future depends on our actions and our interests. Let the world community hear our voices, and they'll have to recognize the results of this referendum, because our community, the people of Donbass, wish it to be this way.
While pro-Russians celebrate, for most Ukrainians and NATO, these events remain illegal and illegitimate. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and all fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad, demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Saleh Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
A former member of parliament tells Press TV that the government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
From September 23rd to 27th, referendums on joining Russia were held in the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, as well as the Zaporozhye and Kherson regions. Pro-Russian representatives of those regions say joining Russia will secure their territories and restore historical justice. They believe the move is vital in the face of what they call constant acts of terror by the nationalist authorities in Kyiv and NATO countries that supply weapons to Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has backed the referendums, saying Moscow will support the decision made by the residents of the four regions.
Today, in the context of a special military operation and referendums in Donbas, saving people in all territories, namely saving people in all territories where this referendum is being held, is the main focus of Russia.
The referendum will determine the fate of 8 million people living in the LPR, the DPR, and the regions of Zaporozhye and Kherson.
People are tired and exhausted. They are being shelled and bombed every day. As a result, the residents of these republics ask authorities to hold referendums as soon as possible. Most of them have been supporting joining Russia since 2014. The second reason is the fear of any potential revenge by the Ukrainian regime.
Decisions of this kind and steps are always taken when the situation allows it. All the pros and cons are weighed. It has now become clear that the referendums are in line with the plans that the top leadership of Russia has. The future of Russia's constituent regions is complicated. Western countries will impose sanctions against their residents, like in the case of Crimea. Those regions were degraded under the Ukrainian leadership. Money was not invested in them at all. And now Russia is trying to ensure security and normal life in those territories.
Despite shelling of the territories where the secession referendums were held, the voter turnout was over 80% in all those regions. First partial results show that the overwhelming majority of the residents are in favor of joining Russia.
Most of the voters believe that if a state can join NATO despite Russia's opposition, then disputed Ukrainian regions can join Russia without the West's approval. Марина Картунова, Moscow.
As largely predicted by pollsters, the Brothers of Italy party has won the most votes in Italy's snap election, leading a right-wing coalition to victory. The turnout for the general election was about 64%, the lowest percentage ever recorded, around 9 points lower than the 73% turnout for the 2018 general election. Brothers of Italy, a group founded 10 years ago by its leader, Giorgia Meloni, grabbed more than 26% of the vote, while its allies, the League and the more moderate Silvio Berlusconi's Forza Italia, received respectively 9 and 8%. Meloni said on Monday that a future centre-right government would not betray the trust of the Italian people.
Questo è il tempo della responsabilità.
This is a time for responsibility. This is a time in which, if you want to be part of history, you must realize that we have responsibility towards millions of people who chose us. We won't betray it, like we never have.
Meloni's flagship policies include defending traditional social values, anti-immigration programs, and the reduction of taxes. Meloni is slated to become the next prime minister, the first woman in Italy who has ever been appointed to that position. The news that a coalition led by Brothers of Italy won a decisive victory in Italy's snap elections has been welcomed by far-right parties from across Europe. The Brothers of Italy has relentlessly advocated for a free Europe, including sovereign countries, and promoted traditional values and essentialist conceptions of gender.
Certainly it won't be an easy task for Meloni to reassure the EU, other international partners and the moderate electorate, and at the same time maintain a strong connection with international populist groups and a more radical electorate. I don't think Meloni will ever find a way to mediate between these issues. That's why I believe her policies won't be too bold.
Among the defeated coalitions in Italy's national elections was the Democratic Party, growingly seen by a large number of Italians as the party of the establishment. Its leader, Enrico Letta, conceded defeat early on Monday, adding that his party would be the largest opposition force in the next parliament.
It is evident that mistakes were made. I will lead the next party until the next Congress, when a new leader will be determined.
According to the Italian constitution, newly elected members of the parliament must now meet within 20 days. The country's president, Sergio Mattarella, will begin consultations on who should be appointed as the new prime minister with the presidents of the Senate and Chamber of Deputies, the leaders of the main parties, and, at a later stage, with parliamentary groups. Max Civili, Rome. ¶¶
British pound takes a pounding yet again, only days after the country's finance minister announced the biggest tax-cutting package in decades, all funded by borrowing at a time of high inflation. They termed it a mini-budget, but it was a mega shift in direction. The Chancellor confirmed the government would implement Prime Minister Liz Truss's leadership campaign pledges to reverse the national insurance rise, cancel the corporation tax rise, and a surprise new tax cut for the highest earners.
Take the additional rate of income tax. At 45%, it is currently higher than the headline top rate in G7 countries like the US and Italy. And it is even higher than social democracies like Norway. But I'm not going to cut the additional rate of tax today, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to abolish it altogether.
Ordinary Britons may not think about exchange rates on a daily basis, but a fall in the pound will affect their day-to-day.
Britain imports nearly half of its foodstuffs, and therefore the pound gets weaker, the cost of that, those basic foodstuffs goes up dramatically. And so anything which is coming in will be hitting inflation at a time when you don't want to have that. The only good news part of actually of this would be actually your exports are now better value. The trouble is if the global demand is shrinking, therefore the demand for those exports would also be shrinking.
There are also concerns about a long recession as winter looms with no end in sight to the energy crisis or the war in Ukraine. Online, calls for a general election are gaining traction. And in the Conservative Party itself, rumors about a no-confidence vote in the brand new Prime Minister.
Some experts say the UK's central bank, the Bank of England, could intervene to halt the pound sliding. Many others are saying the government's decision to borrow its way out of the current situation could end in tears. Saeed Burizap, London.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and oil fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Sally Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
The government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Over 50 million Italians have been called to cast their ballot in what could be a pivotal election as Italy and a number of EU countries reel from repercussions of the conflict in Ukraine. The cost of energy has increased by 80% on average across the country compared to a year ago, while at the current rate, inflation is expected to reach 15% in 2023. with a growing number of Italians saying they've lost trust in politics, a high level of abstention from voting, much higher than the record low of 73% in the 2018 general elections, has been predicted.
I don't favor any of the candidates. I see little individual seriousness. As a matter of fact, I didn't want to vote at all. I only came to the polls out of my civic sense.
The electoral law must be changed. Those who deserve to rule are not rewarded. I have great distrust of the electoral system and of Italy's politics.
According to the current electoral law, which has already been reviewed twice by the Constitutional Court, citizens cannot pick their favorite candidates on the ballot. They can only vote for blocked lists. It's the parties themselves who will decide which candidates get the votes.
Last time a government was chosen by voters was 13 years ago when Berlusconi won the elections. All the elected governments that have followed have been overturned and replaced with executives of the establishment.
According to pollsters, a right-wing coalition is on course to win a comfortable majority of seats in both houses of the parliament, with the far-right Brothers of Italy party likely to win about 25% of the vote. The Democratic Party comes second with around 22% of preferences. Brothers of Italy party leader, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni, is predicted to become Italy's first ever female prime minister, heading a coalition that features anti-immigration populist Matteo Salvini and 85-year-old media tycoon Silvio Berlusconi. Meloni's flagship policies include defending traditional social values, anti-immigration programs, and the reduction of taxes. She has been supporting sanctions against Moscow so far, while Salvini and Berlusconi have recently said they should be reconsidered. Political analysts believe it could take weeks before a government is installed in the country. Some even say Italians will likely only see a new executive in November. However, if everything goes as expected, Giorgia Meloni stands as the next prime minister. Max Civili, Rome.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight. The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades,
have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits in the next 2 years. We now present you an article written by Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled, Record Profits for Grain Firms Amid Food Crisis Prompt Calls for Windfall Tax. Companies at the center of the global grain trade have enjoyed a record bonanza amid soaring food prices around the world, raising concerns of profiteering and speculation in global food markets that could put staples beyond the reach of the poorest and prompting calls for a windfall tax. The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades, have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits over the next 2 years. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, food prices have surged more than 20% this year. According to the World Food Programme, WFP, about 345 million people are experiencing acute food insecurity, compared with 135 million people before the COVID-19 pandemic. Olivier de Schutter, a co-chair of the IPES Food, the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, IPES Food, and United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, said, "The fact that global commodity giants are making record profits at a time when hunger is rising is clearly unjust and is a terrible indictment of our food systems. What's even worse, these companies could have done more to prevent the hunger crisis in the first place." Four companies, the Archer Daniels Midlands Company, Bunge, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus, known collectively as ABCD, control an estimated 70 to 90% of the global grain trade. Olivier de Schutter, the co-chair of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, said, "Global grain markets are even more concentrated than energy markets and even less transparent, so there is a huge risk of profiteering." Olivier de Schutter said this year's food price surge happened despite what are thought to be abundant global grain reserves, but there was insufficient transparency from the companies to show how much grain they hold and no way to force them to release stocks in a timely fashion. Olivier de Schutter added, "We need to be looking at the grain giants and asking what they could have done to avert the crisis and what they could be doing right now." Cargill reported a 23% increase in revenues to a record $165 billion for the year ending 31st of May, while Archer Daniels Midland made the highest profit in its history during the second quarter of this year. Sales at Bunge surged by 17% year-on-year in the second quarter, though its profits were affected by previously incurred charges. Louis Dreyfus reported profits for 2021 up by more than 80% on the previous year, as revenues rose by nearly a quarter to $1.62 billion. John Rogers, an analyst at the credit rating service Moody's, said, "It was not surprising that supply constraints and rebounding demand had increased food prices and led to higher profits." John Rogers claimed, "I don't think they're colluding for outsized profits," adding that many more companies were also taking an increasing share of global grain markets. John Rogers claimed, I don't think they're acting immorally. They're not intentionally driving up prices. He said the profits for grain companies had been increasing overall, but their margins had not markedly increased in percentage terms, adding, "This is a relatively efficient market. I don't think these guys can ramp up the prices." However, unpublished analysis by a non-governmental organization seen by The Guardian suggests that some food companies may be increasing their profit margins too. The analysis found Archer's Daniel Midland increased its profit margin to 4.46% in the first quarter of this year, up from 3.65% in the same quarter in 2021. And Cargill's profit margin increased from 2.5% last year to 3.2% this year. Sandra Martinson, a policy manager at Bond, a network of international development charities, said a windfall tax would be a way to restore some balance to food markets and help the poorest. Sandra Martinson said, "The big agri-food companies are clearly capitalizing on the reduced supply and increased demand, further exacerbated by commodity trading." She added, "When supply is significantly lower than demand, it gives space for price increases. But this is also exacerbated by speculative stock markets, since wheat and other commodities are traded in stock markets and therefore prices fluctuate." Oxfam has also called for a windfall tax on food companies' profits. Alex Maitland, a senior advisor at Oxfam, said, "There are fears that speculation could be a driver in food price rises. Anything that causes hunger and starvation is immoral." Natalie Bennett, a UK Green Party peer, joined the call. She said, "As a short-term measure, there are strong arguments for a windfall tax on the food oligopolies. The handful of companies with significant cross-ownership from hedge funds and from seeds to supermarkets are major contributors to the inflation that's driving the cost of living crisis to new heights." Vicky Hurd, the head of sustainable farming at the UK food coalition Sustain, stopped short of calling for a windfall tax, as she said it was hard to separate out the price effects in supermarkets where consumers buy most of their food. But she called for the British government to regulate to stop abuse. She said, "While farmers, consumers and food workers are suffering in the face of spiralling food prices and fuel prices, those sitting in the middle of the food chain, a small number of huge dominant grain traders, are raking in vast profits." Sandra Martinson said if government rejects a windfall tax, they should consider other means to curb prices, including price caps or tighter regulation on commodity trading, such as the ban on commodity trading introduced in India to limit inflation and price hikes. Sandra Martinson said food companies and commodity speculators were also blamed for fueling the food price rises seen more than a decade ago, when surging prices led to riots in many countries. The causes of the food price rises are complex. The war in Ukraine has played a big part, as Ukraine is one of the world's top producers of grain, sunflower oil, maize, and fertilizer. The war sent food prices soaring to their highest ever levels in March, though some have fallen back slightly since then. A standoff with Russia over moving grain shipments from Ukraine for export has been partially resolved, and some shipments have now moved. But harvests from Ukraine and Russia will be affected this year as well as next year. Rising energy and fertilizer prices, which have also spiraled due to Russia's special operation in Ukraine, have an impact, while the rebound in demand after COVID lockdowns has added further pressure. Grain harvests in Europe, in North America and India have also been affected by the climate crisis. Last year's heat waves in Canada hurt wheat crop yields in Canada, and high temperatures and wildfires this year are likely to inflict damage. This all adds up to a rosy picture for grain producers. Demand for their product is surging, supplies are constrained, and despite rising input prices in the form of energy and fertilizer, their profits look secure. The Guardian contacted all four of the ABCD companies for comment, but has not received any replies. Olivier de Schutter said, "Ultimately, we need to break up the monopolies that have a stranglehold on the food chain. A handful of companies control global seed and fertilizer markets, animal genetics, the global grain trade, and food retail. They're making huge profits at the cost of farmers, at the cost of consumers, and the environment." In Britain, food prices have risen for many staples, adding to woes over energy prices that are set to top £3,500 a year this winter for the average British household. Poverty campaigners have warned people are facing harsh choices this winter over whether to eat or to heat their homes.
Seven, there much pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The fundamental, the core, the main pillar of Islam is Tawheed. Now, what do we mean by Tawheed? Tawheed has many different meanings. The fundamental and the most profound principle of Islam is the concept of Tawheed. And what do we mean by Tawheed? Tawheed has many different meanings. One of the meanings of Tawheed is the meaning that is discussed in common theology, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is one and He's not two, and we prove it, or that there is one existence that is necessary. Rather, Tawheed is also the understanding of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is a better and a deeper discussion on what Tawheed is. That Tawheed is not just, you know, proving, but rather it is a particular ideal on which a particular system is built upon. It deals with this particular issue, that Tawheed is a factor, Tawheed is an aspect, it is an ideal, it is an idea. It is not just a mental idea. It is a reality in which an entire system, an entire ideology is built upon. It is not just the proof that there is only one Allah, that Tawheed means God is one. No. Tawheed is a principle. It is an ideal by which a person builds not only the entirety of their life, rather the entirety of their lives is based upon this ideal, but rather the entire system that this person decides to live upon, the worldview that this person has, is based on this idea of Tawheed. So the book that we would like to introduce to our dear brothers and sisters today, obviously is based on, or tries to show this ideal of Tawheed. So inshallah, we will introduce this book to our dear listeners in our next segment. Inshallah.
Allah,
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. So as mentioned in our previous segment, that we want to talk about Tawheed and introduce a book that speaks about Tawheed. So the title of the book is At-Tawheed, or Monotheism, the belief in only one Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the belief in only one divine creator, only one divine, only one necessary being. Again, as we mentioned, the concept of Tawheed is a very deep and detailed discussion. So anyway, so the complete title of the book is At-Tawheed, or Monotheism, as in the ideological and the value system of Islam. So basically here, it is not just the proof that there is only one Allah, there is only one divine creator, but no, there is a system that is built upon this concept of Tawheed. The book was written by the late Ayatollah Muhammad Taqi Misbayazdi, rahmatullah alayh, who passed away about a year ago, and I had the honor to attend the funeral procession of this great scholar. The book was then translated by N. Tawheedi. Now, unfortunately, I don't know what this N stands for. It could be a brother, it could be a sister. Most likely a brother. Again, not be any other thing. It's just more likely it's a brother. But again, I'm not sure. It was published by the Islamic Propagation Organization, which at the beginning of the Islamic Revolution was the main source of propagating Islam within non-Middle Eastern languages, basically Arabic or Farsi. So English was one of those languages that the IPO, or the Islamic Propagation Organization, dealt with. And there are many other books that they actually published. One of those was obviously this one. Unfortunately, the date of publication is not available in the text. Where it was published in Tehran, again in the Islamic Republic of Iran. So this book basically has two parts. The first part is At-Tawheed in the Ideological System of Islam. And again, there are many different sections to this particular title under this particular heading. And then the second part is At-Tawheed in the Value System of Islam. So we have two things here. We have an ideological system, which is obviously a system that bases itself on concepts, on philosophy, and so on and so forth. Then the second one is on At-Tawheed in the value system, in the ethical system, in the way a man, you know, values other things. He values the world around him. He values himself and others and other creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is basically the two parts of the book, that Tawheed in terms of how it will assist a person in his thinking, and how Tawheed will assist a person in his actions, which is obviously, we as human beings, that's all we have. We have a belief system. So if our belief system is based on Tawheed, the way we think and the way we act based on this particular system that we believe in, will obviously have to follow a certain path. Inshallah, in our next segment, we will read a portion of this book for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned. Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. The book that we introduced to our dear listeners is titled At-Tawheed, or Monotheism, as in the Ideological and the Value Systems of Islam. The book was written by Ayatollah Muhammad Taqi Misbayazdi, rahmatullah alayh, who passed away again, as mentioned previously, within the last year, and was translated by N. Tawheedi, and was published by the Islamic Propagation Organization that is based in the city of Tehran in the Islamic Republic of Iran. So what is actually fascinating to see that within the preface, there is a very good discussion that is had, and therefore we read the preface for our dear listeners. The preface. The establishment and stability of the Islamic system requires, more than anything else, the firmness of the beliefs and values of Islam in the hearts of the people. It's obvious. So in order for a system and an Islamic system to take shape, those particular principles and beliefs and core ideals that Islam has must be believed by the people, and they must have it entrenched within their own hearts. The realization of this very significant matter in its own turn depends upon the universality of Islamic education at different levels by using multifarious means and opportunities. One of the best of such occasions and opportunities is the weekly congregations of Salatul Jum'ah, Friday prayer, particularly in cities where the proceedings of the Salatul Jum'ah are directly broadcast by the radio and television. This is very strictly a particular address to the people of Iran. But again, it is something that we can use that at times of places where people are gathered, it is important to stress this particular point so that people will at least understand that there are certain fundamental principles regarding Tawheed in both their thought and in their action. Hence, in response to the request of the management committee in charge of the affairs of the Salatul Jum'ah in the city of Tehran, I delivered a series of lectures on the status of At-Tawheed in the ideological system and value system of Islam. The text of these lectures were regularly published in the Persian language daily, Viz Jamhuriya Islamiya, the Islamic Republic, that is the name of a newspaper. Now, responding to the requests made by a large number of the listeners and also by some friends, an abridged version of those lectures is being published for the interested readers. It is hoped that this humble service will please Al-Imam Muhammad Al-Mahdi, alayhi salam, may the Almighty Allah hasten his auspicious reappearance. Muhammad Taqi, Misbah Yazdi. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf with Brother Yasser Ibrahim on RIB English Radio.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.